Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday morning. It is the 30th of April, the last day of April 2020. It's hard to believe we've only been through 4 months of this year, but that is indeed the case. And we welcome you to our program this morning. We have a lot to talk about. We have a wonderful group to do it with, and we welcome you as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We are very excited to talk to you. So let's get started. Judy Patrick is with us. We are very thrilled. It's been a little while since Judy's been here, and I couldn't be more happy. She is the Vice President for Editorial Development of the New York Times, the New York Press Association. I just gave you, I don't know, is that a...
that'd be nice.
Yeah, I don't know if that is a higher up title or not, but that's a pretty good one you got already. It's Vice President for Editorial Development of the New York Press Association. Good morning, Judy. How are you?
Good morning. I am so glad that April's over almost, and I'm going to be dancing around a maypole tomorrow, I think. Just glad for May.
Yeah, me too. Sounds good. We'll take it. Speaking of dancing around the maypole, Rosemary Armeo, good morning. How are you? Rosemary, are you there? Hello. Maybe Rosemary's dancing around the pole already. Which I realize how that sounds
if
you've just tuned in. Yeah, there you are. How are you?
Ah, there I am. I had something mute on. No, I actually did have a May Day party a couple of years ago, and we had a pole and everything. It was fun, but the weather's not cooperating this year.
No, nor is the pandemic.
Oh, and that thing about gathering in crowds. Yeah,
right. there's another downside. Our good friend Dan Arizari is with us this morning. He is the chairman of Capital District Latinos, and we're thrilled that he's with us. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. As well as can be expected. But glad to be with you.
Well, it's very nice to have you here, and thank you very much for being with us and for taking the time out. I greatly appreciate it. WAMC's Alan Chartok is on the line as well. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, good morning, Chief. It's great to talk to you. There's some news here in terms of our lockbox numbers. Now, you know we have to get to $1 million because we don't know if we're going to be able to have a fund drive. We did that the last time, but the last time there was some extra money because people were, you know, saving some money on taxes by making contributions. We knew that. But this time it's all or nothing. It's all together. We're all together in this to keep this radio station going. Now here's the problem. In the last drive, in February, our last drive, we were at $396,000 by this point. So we are $145,000 behind where we were last time. Now, that sounds bad, but it's not so bad because we're making up. We were further behind. We're making it up. We can get there. So we need, 145 people who would give us, $1,000, and that would be terrific. But in any case, anything you can do now is really important to keeping the station on. And I know as a group, we can make this happen. I know that. So let's just try to do what we did the last time. It was nearly over before it even started. And we're trying to keep pace with that because we cannot have all our volunteers to take your pledges by phone, leaving us to reach our goal online or by mail. And online is WAMC.org. Please go there. I'm asking, please, WAMC.org or go to the mail, which is 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. There, Joe, I'm done.
All right. Well, it would be very nice to be well over $300,000 by the time we end the broadcast this morning, which is entirely possible. We're at 280 right now. But whatever, as Alan said, whatever you can do, it's WAMC.org online. You can also just send us a check in the mail, 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. And for everyone who has done something already, thank you. And for everyone who is going to, thank you. And for everyone who hasn't yet, please just think about it and do it. Okay.
And I just want to add one thing,
yes,
Joe,
sir.
For those people who can't, there are people who are really suffering.
It's a tough
really
time.
Hurting. They can't. That's fine. We get that, and we respect you, and we welcome you, and we're glad you're listening. But for those who can, do something, okay?
WAMC.org, WAMC.org. All right, let's go to Oh, I see. So, no, I was just looking. So, apparently, we were reading yesterday's numbers and not today's numbers. So, we're at 280,000 right now.
Wow.
And we need we're at a difference of $120,000.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
That's great.
Yeah.
So we're making some real progress.
Correct.
Here.
Yes. Correct. All right.
Sorry for my misinformation. I don't know how I got it. It must have just appeared in a dream.
It's all okay. We're good now. There are also we'll move on, and then I'll forward you something, Alan, so you have it. Okay. Good morning, everybody. Welcome. Thank you very much for being with us. It's a delight to have you here. So let us start with the stories of the day, and there's a lot. Of course, one of the big stories is another 3.6 million people filing for unemployment, making that total even higher. That is one thing. There is also the story that the White House is embracing optimism as the death toll passes 60,000. The early results of a trial of an experimental drug left officials hopeful. President Trump is pressing a crash vaccine program, but experts see risk in a process that is rushed. Experts do say that rushing a vaccine is risky, despite the president's desires. The stock market rallied after this news about an antiviral drug. The drug, which I have tried to get my pronunciation down several times to make sure that I had it right, and I'm still not 100% sure I have it, but I believe it's remdesivir. Does that sound right to everyone else?
I don't know about the N. I've been pronouncing it remdesivir. So maybe you're right. Maybe I didn't write
the remdesivir. Remdesivir?
Yeah.
Remdesivir.
Yeah, that's what I wrote.
Okay.
I may be wrong.
There is no N in it, so that does make sense. All right. Well, it's an experimental drug and could speed recovery in infected patients, and is being heralded as very optimistic at the White House, including by Dr. Anthony Fauci, who also does say that it can have its downside as well. Florida is beginning to reopen, but hard-hit regions will remain shut. The Los Angeles mayor says all residents can now get tested. Louisiana lawmakers consider overriding the governor's stay-at-home order. Meanwhile, meatpacking plants are now critical infrastructure, but that means very little, and it has not really changed the case at those plants. And more economic news. The economy shrank 4.8%, and the worst is yet to come, according to Economist. Okay, so those are the headlines from this morning. Let us begin, Alan, with you on this optimism from the White House about this new drug.
Well, we do know that this president knows that he cannot be reelected if the economy is in the shambles that it is in right now. So he is very anxious to get everybody back on board. He's doing everything he can to do that, and he is suggesting, I think irresponsibly, and has been all along, that it's going to be, that there will be a premature cure to all of this. Dr. Fauci, for his part, has made it clear we're going to be having problems, I believe he's been saying, until December, at least December, and that there'll be a revived, incidence of all of this. So once again, the president is being irresponsible and should be held accountable for what he's doing, and I believe he will be held accountable.
Rosemary Armeo.
Oh, we're all going to die. It doesn't matter what trouble.
Well, that's true.
I mean, really, this is ridiculous.
You mean like today or over time? Like, a normal life expectancy?
Sooner rather than later. I mean, this is the president who was happy that due to his great leadership, we would keep the deaths, and we seem to be on track to 100 to 225,000 dead, and we're right on track for that. It's not good news. Calling it good news and putting a smiley face on while you say it does not change that. And I hope people who are losing relatives will speak out. They know it's all just messaging. That's Trump's thing is he markets, and that's what he's doing now. He's marketing a terrible disaster that he played a big part in as something good.
But Jared,
and even beyond that, there's all kinds of climate issues and labor issues that I hope Dan will get into with these meatpacking plants. We have like some really fundamental problems beyond the epidemic. That's all.
So the one of the issues you were talking about, the president putting a smiley face on this, Jared Kushner spoke to Fox and Friends and said the federal government rose to the challenge. This is a great success story, and I think that's really, you know, what needs to be told.
Ridiculous.
Well, I know I slept better last night than I ever did because
Did you, Dan?
Jared, and
slept
I said,
better?
Well,
yeah.
If Jared said, by the way, he looks like Woody from Toy Story a little bit, doesn't he?
He's
an
a genius,
Woody,
you know.
But,
yeah.
So I guess we're all, you know, we're past the danger. So everybody relax. And by the way, today's the last day of the government mandatory social distancing, right?
That's right. That's right. And another big story today, because April 30th was when the social distancing policy, the vice president seemed to end it earlier. But yes, it ends today. And it's up to individual states as it has been. This idea, though, Judy, of rushing a vaccine. We all want there to be something that we can be vaccinated for, and even a cure for this would be even better. But how realistic is that? And doing anything like this, from everything that I have read over history, everything that I have read scientifically. When you start, it's not like this is going to be done by the end of the week. It takes a really long time to come up with a vaccine.
Yeah, it's one of the things about this virus is it's scary as heck, because we're hearing from the doctors that it manifests itself in these strange ways, and the treatment protocols they're really coming up with them on the fly. So the idea of a virus, it sounds very attractive to people, but I think the American public has proven that it's smarter than sometimes we think, because I think people realize this is very dangerous, and they do want to be safe, and they do want a safe vaccine, and they do respect the doctors and the scientists. And despite the president, who from the beginning has touted this as a success story, when we've got 60,000 people who have died, we have an economy that's shut down, and his briefings just talk about what a great job is being done. It reminds me of every town, school, village government, which comes out with a budget that says, your taxes are going to go up 20%. And then by the end of the budget workshops, it's down to 7%, and everybody's happy because it's only 7%. But it's still 7%. You're still, mm-hmm. A vast amount of people have died. This is, I think the public realizes that we need to proceed cautiously with this virus and this vaccine.
You know, I agree with you. I think the public generally does understand that. What I don't get is the stock market. Can someone explain that to me? Because yesterday, when it was up on just the sort of the rumor, the talk of this drug, over the last couple of weeks, I just don't understand the stock market at all. I would think it would be. I'm not wishing it ill. I just don't understand it.
Well, can I just say it here, too? This drug that there is some encouragement about is not a vaccine. It's a treatment, not even a very good treatment. If it should come out and all the trials are perfect, which is a big question mark, it would only cut down the time of recovery. And already Europe has suspended use of this drug because of adverse patient reactions, which are horrible. So we have conflated that into, a possible vaccine is on the horizon.
No,
don't trust the American people, and I don't trust the stock market. I think they're all looking for happy news.
Now, you know, Rosemary, there is good news that went along with the remdesivir, and that is the Oxford experiment on a vaccine. They think they've got it. Oxford thinks they've got it. So both of these pieces of news were coming out at the same time. And I have a feeling that's partially responsible for what happened at the stock market, although I agree with you. You got a bunch of really rich guys sitting there trying to outguess everybody else and saying, if this news is good, will people start buying something else? And so I'm going to put some money into the market and make some money today.
But even that Oxford,
right.
trial has a first human trial began last week. They are saying the best they could do would be a year, probably 18 months. Yep. So while, yes, it's great that they think they may have something, it's still a really long time before we would see the results of it. And to see that kind of, and this is just back to my earlier point of not understanding the stock market, of why something that isn't really based. You know, if you say, oh, the trials are doing really well and we can put this to market, well, then, yeah, I can understand it. But since we're just, you know, we're getting ready to get our first guinea pigs lined up, I'm not really sure why the great hoopla on that. But
you know, Joe, if you're standing on the corner, I'm sorry, I'll just go real fast. If you're standing on the corner and you are selling and you are taking bookie bets, right?
Right.
You could go to jail for that. You could. You could be arrested. You get a ticket, whatever.
My grandfather was a bookie.
There you go. If you gamble, Joe, if you gamble on the stock market, perfectly legal.
Right. Yeah. I think you may have done that too. Go ahead, Dan.
I think the problem, Joe, is from the beginning, the leadership from the White House has been so averse to science, right? And it's been so much happy talk that instead of approaching this in a sober way from the beginning.
Hey, Dan.
You had denial. Yes.
I'm sorry I have to interrupt you because I have to take a break, but I promise I'll come right back to you when I can.
Oh, sure.
I just realized as you started that we were back in time. WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and Dan Arizari. We are very happy that you are with us. Alan, 281,308 in the lockbox right now. $181,308. And whatever you can do to help us is vitally needed, is it not? Alan, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Could you repeat the question?
Of course I can. I was just saying we have $281,308 in the lockbox, which is good news, but there much more needs to be done. And then we also, I believe, have some comments that you can read as well.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yes. I can go over to get Dan's thoughts
why don't we...
Let me finish with Dan, and then I'll come back to you, and then we'll be in Albuquerque before you know it.
And thank you for bringing up.
No problem. Good morning, Dan. So let's get back to you. We were talking before this, and so where were we? What were you saying?
Well, I was just going to make the point that the problem from the beginning has been that the approach from the White House has been so scattered and so unscientific. And, you know, we had denial from the beginning of the word that the virus was out there by the president. And then we started moving into a different phase, or he started moving into a different phase. So, you know, you deny the science, then you embrace the science to some degree. And then you start this process of, like, magical thinking that, you know, you start talking about hydrochloroquine.
Yeah,
and you start, you know, jumping towards another bright spot that you think might help you in the polls, and it's like watching a 13-year-old on Ritalin playing whack-a-mole, because there's no science there.
Yeah,
this is all about reaction, right? So you don't have somebody who employs a sober approach to this incredible problem. He could have at the beginning said, "I'm going to follow the science here. We have a rough row to hoe. We are going to set about this as a nation together." But oh no, he chooses to divide us, which has been his MO since the beginning. And tragically, what we have now, if you could fit them neatly into two different boxes, is we have a group of people, a group of citizens in the nation that look to the scientists for direction, and a group of people who look to the Pied Piper of the Oval Office, who is about to run us all off the cliff. And that is the approach, that is the criticism that I have of all of this. And so when you have even the slightest good news, all of a sudden you have these folks who are tuned into the president, like people on, you know, who are in the stock market and the hedge funders, who want good news because they want to get out of the doldrums of this economic crisis. And they start salivating. Oh, yeah, we're going to, you know, Jared Kushner said it's okay. And we have this incredible disparity between the believers in science and the believers in the magical thinking that the president is spouting. And that really creates, it deepens the crisis, and it will deepen the crisis going forward. And by the way, as we have all heard on cable news, this crisis is hitting people of color in a way that nobody had, well, nobody but people in the communities of color that I represent could have thought possible.
But I want to just say, and Dan, and I know that it's inappropriate, and none of this is funny, but I'll never be able to think of Jared Kushner without giving him the nickname Woody Kushner.
Yeah, there is that.
That's what Ivanka calls him.
You're going to go there, are you? Excellent.
Careful.
All right.
I have those comments you were talking about.
Oh, they could not have come sooner. Yes, go ahead.
Here's a light and comical one. Here's a donation from President Trump. At least that's the name on my stimulus check. I'm sure he'd want you to have some of it in honor of the fine work you do in covering him. As for me, over the last 40 years, I've listened to you more than to my husband, but have never given a second, time in 1 year until now. Our, in capital letters, our, I love it, make me cry. Our radio station is simply the best. Thank you. And here is somebody who is addressing the ability to give. I've never pledged this much, but I live with WAMC and the value and value the sense of community it brings now that we are otherwise so dispersed. And those of us who are lucky enough to have our regular incomes untouched really need to step up now. Thanks, WAMC. And thank you so much for all you do. Guys, do another letter. I have been listening to NPR since I was a little girl, but I recently moved to the Albany area. Now I have fallen in love with WAMC. I am now at a point in my life where I can actually give. So here is my very first donation. That's great. I will be, there will be many more.
Great stuff. Oh.
Yeah.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org for more information. WAMC.org, and you can pledge right online. You can also just send us a check, WAMC, 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. All right, we go to letters. Mike says, why do Republicans eschew science? Science often provides definitive answers to questions. Republicans prefer a system which allows them to substitute their own opinions as the answers to every question. Hence, science must go. Peter says, a great success story. Jared Kushner's happy talk yesterday gives Elmer Gantry, the Wizard of Oz and the Music Man, a pass on being the worst con man in American history. How can the COVID-19 pandemic be any kind of success story when the Trump administration did nothing for almost 3 months after knowing that the virus was coming to the U.S.? Please read the column in today's New York Times by Dr. Kent Sepkowitz. The doctor works at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York, and he sheds great light on the complexity of human behavior during this pandemic. Also, John says, does the stock market represent anything real? What does it make or produce? I wish we could move away from this looking towards the exchanges as signifying something real. What would rather hear about the workers, producers pay relative to the CEOs or the amount of taxes paid by Amazon, Apple, or any other large corporation? And I guess that was sort of the question I was having earlier. The Dow is down this morning, but you would think that if it's going to react to anything, it would react to the unemployment numbers, less so than the possibility of a drug, which is interesting. Cool.
Well, we had one letter, Joe, which indicated that a lot of this has to do with the Fed and what they're doing to prop up the stock market, and that people who are in the know, there are plenty of people who sit at their computers all day long and this day trade and deal with this stuff. And then, of course, there are these logarithms and algorithms and all the rest of that stuff that the big traders use depending on this or that. There are a lot of answers to your question. Good answers.
They could be happy about all the stimulus money they're getting and the fact that they don't have to give any of it back and they don't have to keep people employed. You know, the big multinational corporations or the big rich corporations. They were not asked by Congress. There was nothing in the law that said they had to retain their employees. They could shut down as many as they want. They could keep buy back their stocks. None of that was included in the legislation, as far as I know.
We have a letter from Jack who says, on one hand, it is heartening that so many Americans are united in fighting this virus. On the other hand, there are still none of people willing to do their part that I'm reminded of Pogo's wisdom. We have met the enemy, and it is us. We go to, David, who says, simple answer for the stock market, the Federal Reserve, oh, this is what you were saying, Alan, has been pumping money into the engine number 6 on full steam. And simple answer for the stock market, the Federal Reserve has been pumping money into it like engine number 6 on full steam, and corporations have been the recipients of large tranches of cash to boot, probably the largest transfer of wealth in our lifetimes. Paul says, good morning, panel. I hope you're enjoying all this well. Watch for this as Trump's message morphs. He will say he saved 2 million lives because the initial estimate said 2.2 million, that if we did nothing, and his 35% will believe that. See you on the other side of this, making my donation to the lockbox today, which is very nice. And then there is a letter from, that was one about the stock market too, but it was very similar to the other one, so we will skip. Hello. All right.
Are they off? The races?
Yeah. It was just a reminder of the governor spoke about Saratoga yesterday. Okay. It doesn't look good for the racing season. But
if you followed Mario's advice, and Mario always told me this again and again and again, he only bets on one race, and it's always the fifth horse in the fifth race.
Fifth race.
For all of you who are looking for, you know, a good thing to.
Yeah, no horses running, I don't think, anywhere, but we can find them. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll update on letters. We'll go to another subject, and we welcome you to help out our lockbox, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. Please do what you can. WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and Dan Arizari. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. There was an article in the Los Angeles Times this week that said Black and Latino Californians aged 18 to 64 are dying more frequently of COVID-19 than their white and Asian counterparts relative to their share of the population. That, according to an LA Times analysis of state health department data, newly released figures in the grim toll of the novel coronavirus show once again profound disparities in people of color and in the people's odds of survival that fall along racial and ethnic lines. In this case, the data also belie the conventional wisdom that old age is the primary risk for death. Dan Arizari, let me ask you of what you make of those numbers and if there is a comparison to be made in our region as well.
Well, the numbers are terrifying. I read that article, and I was quite taken aback. But part of this is that we really don't understand this virus yet. And anybody who tells you that they do understand it, that they know that it's going to stop in the end of April, there'll be zero cases, doesn't know what they're talking about. And at the beginning, remember, Joe, that this was a disease that we felt primarily was attacking older folks. And then we come to find out that there's this whole gamut of the population that it's running through. And so our understanding of the disease has changed. And also, one of the things that I would just put a caveat on this information is there are still places that are not reporting demographic information, racial and ethnic information regarding infection and morbidity. So we're really still not aware of the contours of this disease in the way that we will be, unfortunately, a few months ahead. But that being said, we have a population, the Hispanic population, especially in California, skews younger, right? So of all the Latinos, there's a larger segment of that population that is of all the population in California, and the Hispanic population in particular, that skews younger because that's the way it is. Now, with regard to how this is affecting that community, the Hispanic community writ large, it's the whole idea that we are a community that suffers from a lot of the social determinants of health. We have underlying disease, generational at times. So you have high blood pressure, you have obesity, you have heart problems, and that is fertile ground for the virus to grow. And so while I am alarmed about what this says about how it's attacking young people, it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't surprise me as much, because having worked at the center right here in Albany, we have been focused on health disparities, and we see that these disparities exist. And as everybody has said, if you watch the news, at least anything but Fox, we are seeing that this crisis is laying bare all of these disparities that exist in society. And so if you bring it home to the Capital District, you see that the African-American community is being adversely, disproportionately affected. They are 11.4% of the population, yet they represent 20% of the cases in Albany County. And you have to wonder. It's a good thing that they're testing a lot in, for instance, through Whitney Young. I'm glad to see that that's happening. But you have to wonder, in places like the Hollow, where people live with smokestack industry, where asthma rates are higher than anywhere else in the county, how this is affecting that particular segment of the population. And so right here, we're seeing these health disparities unfold. And I'm really concerned about the Latino community, because I don't feel, well, there's 60 cases of Latinos infected. I think that that's a very low number, because I think that the population is, a lot of the population is uninsured, has poor access to health services. We live in food insecure communities. We suffer from all these comorbidities. And we have a large segment of the population that is undocumented and therefore very circumspect about availing themselves of the different services that there are. So I feel like this is a simmering crisis, and we aren't doing enough in terms of the state and local governments to find the folks that are likely infected in the Latino community, because we're not communicating the message in a culturally competent way. And I'm very scared about that.
We've talked, obviously, to you and to members of the African American community who have expressed great alarm, and even, but overall, many have expressed alarm over the lack of data. Rosemary, I mean, that's something that we've talked about. You've mentioned a couple of times of finding the information that we need to know, and which is why testing is so important even to this day. And yet, we still don't have a lot of the basics that we need.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about this a little on the media project this week. I read.
Uh-oh. Well, she said I read, and then I think maybe she went to go read. We'll get her back on. All right. We'll work on that. So, Judy, anything on testing?
Well, I can tell you what Rosemary said on the media project, because I was on there as well with her.
Excellent.
But was she talked about the fact that that we all spend so much time. A lot of us spend a lot of time trying to find out information about this disease and finding, the data. And we still don't know a lot of things. There's so many things we don't know. And if listening to Dan lay out what's happening in the, Latino community, it does. It seems like a real crisis, just, not waiting to happen. That's happening right now. And people tend to think, well, if you're not in that community, you don't have anything to worry about. Well, you certainly do. This isn't, if not from a human perspective, just think of it for your own personal self-preservation, that it's important for this, our whole community, our whole world, to be safe. And we need to be worried about people in the third world nations who are this disease is going to ravage, as well as what's happening in our suburbs and in our cities here. I mean, the idea that, this is just affecting us, we need to get rid of that notion. It's not going to be eliminated when we get our magical vaccine, because that vaccine has got to be delivered to the poor impoverished places in Africa and South America and the Middle East. I mean, this is a global pandemic, and I think we lose sight of that too often.
Rosemary,
I'm sorry.
I think Rosemary's back.
Yeah, Rosemary's back. I was talking away here. Alan, if I were a skeptic, I'd say you fix this. Every time I start to talk, I get cut off.
Yeah, trust me, Rosemary. I value you very much. Yeah.
I know. I'm joking. So I have no idea what I said that got heard and what didn't.
Well, you didn't get very far. You were talking about a red. I will say that Judy did pick up and tell us a little bit what you had mentioned on the media project, but we were talking overall about testing. Is there anything you want to add to that? Maybe she's gone again.
Maybe she's not here.
Well, that's not going well, is it? All right. Well, we'll figure that one out.
What is this little button I keep seeing on my desk?
hey, Joe, can I make a point?
Yes, of course. Of course, Dan.
So what we're seeing also are the effects of this draconian and vitriolic policy on the part of the administration towards people of color, but specifically the undocumented community. So if you read recently where the president is saying, well, we're going to put a caveat, we're going to put a clause in the funding that these states want because these sanctuary cities shouldn't be getting any money. So what that means and how that translates into the impact that it has on this current situation, this crisis, is you have people who are infected, who are in households where there may be multi-generational households, who are afraid to go and get tested or go to present to their local emergency room because they fear that ICE might be lurking in the shadows waiting mm-hmm. to snap them up. And so what happens is that you have greater infection rate in that community because people are reluctant to avail themselves of services. And what you are doing eventually is that you are putting wood on the fire and fanning mm-hmm. the flames mm-hmm. because of this policy. So you see, what comes out of the White House in terms of immigration policy, it affects what's happening today with this pandemic. And that's the stupidity of having a policy against sanctuary cities, because, in fact, one of the arguments that local police departments make is that having this policy in place, you bring people out of the shadows. So they report crime. So they're able to avail themselves of the law enforcement community so that they can be citizens, participating citizens in the society. And what you've done with your immigration policy is you force people into the shadows who are sick and are afraid to get tested or don't even know about it. Because let me tell you, Joe, I don't see information out there in Spanish like there should be in this tri-city area. And that's one of the things that we're trying to focus on at Capital District Latinos.
Meaning the COVID information that is being distributed is not also being distributed in Spanish.
That's correct. I don't see enough of it out there. I don't hear the messages. We don't have a radio station or a radio program that is can be like a bilingual contact point where people can call in with their questions, or you know, we can have messages that are out there. There should be PSAs, local PSAs. I see them out of New York City, but there should be local PSAs in English and Spanish saying, if you feel the symptoms, these are the symptoms, this is what you should do. I don't see that. And maybe if it's out there, I stand corrected, but I don't see the outreach happening in this community. And I keep hearing anecdotally that the infection is spreading in our community. I just heard about 7 people who are infected, who are undocumented. Somebody from the clinic let me know that this is out there and it's real. And so government inaction locally needs to change. And I'm just sending this message out to whoever's listening that we really need to focus on this community, because I fear that we're going to find out when it's too late.
We, Dan Arizari, thank you very much. We're going to take a break. We're going to go to our news at the top of the hour with Ray Graff. Also, we want to thank all of you who have helped out in the lockbox so far. We still need your help. It's WAMC.org, and all you have to do is go online, right, Alan?
That's right, at WAMC.org, or get an envelope and a stamp and send a check to WAMC at 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206.
We will be right back after this. Music from Art Tatum this morning, a playlist always online at WAMC.org/roundtable. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable panel. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Judy Patrick, and Dan Arizari. And Alan, I believe you have some new comments about people who have been very generous and giving to the lockbox this morning.
You are terrific when you remind me of that. And I am not as good at my machinery here, but I'm finding them.
That's all right. You'll find them. They're right there on top. Just came through.
You are right there. Okay. I continue to be a huge fan. I want to thank the fundraising team for mentioning this morning that if people are not able to give, that's okay. The pledge appeal was compelling and with heart. I'm not suggesting my email below. He had written about that before. Okay. And then also, yes, I get it. So that's what I have, Joe. Did you see any others there that I should see?
Yeah, there's a new one, but I'll send that to you. And okay. You should have gotten it, but that's all right.
Well, yeah, you never know.
No,
you don't know.
Okay. Well, it's going swimmingly so far, isn't it?
Yes. Do we have any idea? You're good at this. How much we've done?
Yeah.
Today,
well, we're at $282,734 in the walk box. About $3,000 this morning.
Well, that's not good enough. I'm so sorry. It breaks my heart because we need to get there. And it's going to take everybody making an individual choice. That's all it comes down to, is the choice that, you know, we should all do something to support it, and then we'll be whole. And if we don't do that, then, you know, the whole social experiment in this thing called public radio, this thing called WAMC, which is very different than most public radio, will have failed. Do things fail? A newspaper here in Great Barrington just went under. Things fail when people don't support them. And we have to recognize that in this kind of a capitalist society, which it is, no question, that we have choices to make. The choice question is, Do you make the chopped liver, or do you, in the egg salad, or do you just say, okay, I'm going to take a moment to go to WAMC.org or put something in an envelope for 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. Now, you know why I love the going to WAMC.org? Because we could tell immediately whether we're going to make it or not. And really, in the end, we never know that. We never, ever know that.
That's right. All right. Have you seen comments?
Have I seen comments?
If not, I'll move on. Or I can read them.
You read them.
All right. So this from a listener echoing a previous donor, if your income has not been affected by the pandemic, and especially if it has increased and you have what you need, you have an obligation to give now. Thank you so much. Another listener writes and says, this is my first time giving. I love your mission. I live in a journalistic desert, city of Newburgh, New York. I appreciate your content. It cuts through the static. And the final one for the moment, to everyone at WAMC, thank you for all you do. I'm a 61-year-old union stagehand. We were one of the first to lose our jobs and probably the last to get it back. The only good thing about losing my job is that I finally can listen every day. I'd give more if I had it, but I'm okay with giving up an ice cream habit for a month to donate instead. Wow. Stay safe and on the air. So,
and think about that. That ice cream, and I finally found them, by the way. I was reading along with you, Joe. That ice cream, won't sustain you. It might clog your arteries, but not WAMC. Don't you see?
No clogging there. No.
It's fat-free.
You're not convincing me. I'm sorry. I give to WAMC, but ice cream, no.
You can't give up on the ice cream?
No,
I get it.
Okay. So all of those people who eat ice cream, they can also give to WAMC.
That's
yes.
right.
Quite right.
Or egg salad or whatever.
Chopped liver.
Beth writes to us and says, women make up majority of essential workers, from factory to grocery to doctors. That from Beth. Christine says, Dana is right. The disparity that COVID-19 is having on the Latino community in the Capital District and beyond is amazingly indeed. We need a bilingual contact point, AMC can be a perfect conduit for that in solidarity. We go to Charles, who says, staying home and collecting a check is a luxury that is afforded to very few in our society and predominantly a white benefit. The majority of working class Americans are in a vulnerable stage because their jobs are either gone or considered essential service. Undocumented immigrants are in an even worse position because if they don't work, they don't eat. I believe these numbers coming out represent a socioeconomic situation rather than a biologic predisposition to this particular virus. Mary is writing to us about elective surgery. I'm a physician, and I'm afraid that many people think that elective surgery equals unnecessary surgery. Not true. Elective surgery is everything except emergency surgery. Elective surgery includes such things as cancer surgery, cardiac bypass surgery, and kidney transplants, operations that are absolutely necessary but can be done on a scheduled basis, not instantly. Good point. Also, we got this from Bob, who says, it was reported yesterday that the governor of Florida has ordered the state's medical examiners to not publicly report the numbers of deaths due to COVID-19. I think this will soon be the norm in Republican-led states as they adopt a damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead approach to reopening their state's businesses. Watch for the feds to also start hiding the death data, just like it's hiding the testing availability numbers now.
That's one of the reasons I think that a lot of people didn't want to do a lot of testing early, because they didn't want to know how many cases were out there. I think the federal government wasn't pushing for this because the president has even said this, that some places seem like they have more just because they're testing more. Well, they have more because they're testing more. It's not a seam issue. It's that they're actually testing. And I think the push to testing gives us the reality that we need. The push not to test gives us a false sense of things, that it's not as bad as we think it is.
There's a letter from John that says, I'm beginning to wonder if Trump and those around him are lifting these restrictions early intentionally with the goal of increasing deaths in the African-American community and other people of color. It totally fits with their racist thinking that COVID-19 won't reach the real Americans, i.e. white, in the rural areas, so allow it to run wild and kill off as many city dwellers, not white, as possible. Think I'm being hysterical? I'm gay, and I saw the Republican Party do exactly this to us in the 1980s and 1990s. And
well, you know, Joe, if I'm...
Dan, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I just want to make a comment about that. And you know, this is how some of these conspiracy theories take hold. And I remember very well being in the South Bronx at the time that AIDS was really becoming, we were becoming aware of the AIDS crisis. And it had a lot of similarities, like people didn't know where you could get it from. They were afraid of people who even looked like they may be sick. Certainly, the gay population was shunned. So there are a lot of elements that remind me of that crisis. And again, who did that crisis hit the most? It was people of color, people with addiction, gay, black, African American, and Latino men. So I don't subscribe to that level of cynicism. But I will say, what difference does it make if there's a conspiracy or not, if the results are the same? I mean, I just wanted to make a point because Rosemary had raised it earlier in the broadcast that, you know, we're looking at a crisis in our food chain, right? The meat and poultry processing plants. And I saw a statistic that was mind-boggling to me, but again, it wasn't totally surprising, that said, this is from CNN, so if I got this wrong, I apologize, but I did see it on CNN. It said, in all of the meat packing industry, 35% of the folks who work in those factories and those processing centers, 35% are Latino, 20% are African American, 8% are Asian. So 63% of the meat packing industry, those people who are getting sick, those people who stand shoulder to shoulder on lines, they are people of color. And so when the president says, we are at war, it's like it's a war out there. Well, who's the cannon fodder for this war? And that's, I think, the point that the writer is making. And we have to ask ourselves that question, too, because now you put an order out that says the meat packing plants have to stay open. So what happens if you're scared because you've seen people die and they tell you you have to come into work? And in some of these states, if there is an opportunity for you to go back to work, then you can't collect unemployment. So what are we doing to this population? We're basically sentencing them to death. I know that sounds extreme, but when you work that closely together and you don't have the type of equipment that you need to be safe, I mean, come on. There's not far to go in terms of a logical leap.
We're being told this is anecdotally, but people who are working in these plants are saying that they're being told to work. They're being told that everything is okay, and as Dan points out, that many and union officials are saying that it endangers the health of some of America's most vulnerable workers, many of whom are Latino, African American immigrants. And so I don't know, but I also, as we were reading, when we looked at the story at the beginning, Rosemary, mm-hmm. that the plants really aren't doing much yet. Because they really can, and as we were saying yesterday, some changes have to be made, and those are significant changes that are going to take a while. And yet, the problem, as of right now, still very much exists.
You know, everything about what's happening in our packing plants now happened at the turn of the century. The immigrants came from different places, and they were Eastern European, and it was unions who stood up for them. And I've not heard people talk about them. Unions need to be standing up for healthcare and alterations to the plant and equipment. And that is not does not seem to be happening. We're hearing, oh, they're being forced. People are being forced to go back to work or forego unemployment. That is wrong. And it's wrong for them and for anybody else. All people who work in those kind of conditions, for those low-paying jobs, important jobs. I hope that what the president does, keeping those plants open, will result in improvements to labor conditions.
Alan, what do you think?
I wouldn't hold my breath, Rosemary. This guy is not somebody, this president, who is going to favor labor unions under the most...
No, he's not going to favor it. It will have to be forced, just like it was in the turn of the century.
Well, yes. He'll be forced when he's thrown out, in my opinion. Yeah. it is a disgrace. It's a national disgrace that people are being forced to risk their lives in what are terrible working conditions and inhumane conditions.
One thing, though, that this situation has given immigrants, Hispanic immigrants especially, a control, a power that they didn't have before. They really are a huge part of our food supply, and that's in...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
sorry.
Boy.
It happens again.
Don't you hate it when that happens?
Come back, Rosemary. Come back.
Rosemary, see the light. Come back.
How about this?
There you go. I can.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I'm saying maybe this is naive, but it seems to me that don't you get a better negotiating position when immigrant workers are in control of our supply chain? No pickers, no factory workers, no processing meat and vegetable processing plant workers. Doesn't this give them and their unions more power? I mean, I would be totally energized right now if this were my field.
Rosemary, I think that I did see a couple of interviews on CNN of some of the unions that are in place there, and they're making that point. They're saying, how are we going to send people back if there's no testing?
Yes.
To the degree that there needs to be. So I do think that the unions are active. But in terms of the point that you're making about our importance to the food chain, I mean, think about immigrant or migrant workers in the fields. I mean, this is another industry where you are seeing infection rates at a high rate. And you know what really gets to me is that time and time again, this president has had an opportunity to take the high road. He could have said, you know what, we're sending the National Guard into all the meat processing plants to conduct testing of everybody who works in these plants to see so that they can quarantine. Those healthy can go back to work, provided that the conditions are sterilized. But no, instead he just says, you got to go back to work. And once again, we see an opportunity squandered.
Look, there's no disagreement with us, and the government is doing a terrible job and is exploiting people, and their record on immigration is just freaking deplorable. But what I'm talking about...
So close.
What you thought you were talking about.
Just when she got all revved up, too. That's what I hate. She was ready to roll.
I've tried to figure out what it is. I think I'm pressing against when I hold the phone.
All right. You can't use your hands. Gesticulating is not good when you're
and
you
I know that's
devices.
Exactly what I'm doing. But what I was saying is that I think that we must have a new wave of activism that we saw in the 1960s with Cesar Chavez, when farm workers and activists in the rest of the community banded together and said, look, these people have rights and they're important to us. Aren't we in that same position right now? We should all be
in a better position, because every workplace is going to have this issue. Teachers are going to be worried about going back to school. I mean, you've got the whole country. Every business that opens up, there are going to be employees who are worried about going back to school or back to work, because maybe they do have asthma. Maybe they do have one of these comorbidities. Everybody's going to be concerned. And so I think you're going to have a groundswell of concern for workers' rights.
We got this from George.
Well, I wish that were true.
There.
Yeah, I wish that were true. But you know what we're seeing is a cynicism. I don't even want to call it cynicism anymore. I think it's more nihilism than cynicism. But we're seeing this policy of attacking these blue states around the issue of budget shortfalls, right? So you have Mitch McConnell saying, we're not going to give this money to these states because they didn't handle their economies the way that they should have, and we're not going to bail out unions. I mean, this is an attack point that the administration is employing because they want to see public employee unions go out of business.
We got this letter from George. It says, actually, there are currently 151 labor actions being carried out by unions across the country. These actions are getting very little coverage by the press. How do you improve that?
Okay, so I have another commercial to make here because I've been hearing from listeners and from my own family about meatpacking plants since I am, an anti-vegetarian. And there are a lot of actions about this, and we do need coverage of them. And one of them is Morgan Spurlock. Remember him from
Yes.
Super Size Me?
Yes.
His next documentary is called Holy Chicken. Highly recommended. It's on Amazon. And he takes a look at the whole farm industry, the
Oh, dear. All right.
Oh, boy.
Let me go to a couple of letters, and we'll try to get the connection back. Gary says, as of today, we have 32.8% of the entire world's COVID-19 cases. We have 26.9% of the entire world's COVID deaths. USA has 4.2% of the world's population. As far as Jared Kushner, if that is success, I am sure I would not want to see what failure looks like. Meanwhile,
yeah, how's that Mideast peace plan going for Jared?
June says thalidomide. That's the only word one need remember when debating drug safety. If not for one woman, a physician and pharmacist, that drug would have been marketed here. She didn't approve the research, and that saved countless babies from shortened limbs.
That's true. Not only that, Joe, but there were some false starts on the even on the polio vaccine.
Right.
So we do know that you have to be very, very careful, or you'll be very, very sorry.
Paula writes and says, invoking the Defense Production Act just took the workers' rights away to an extent. The government is forcing the plant to stay open. Thus, the workers must show up or they have voluntarily relinquished their jobs and don't qualify for unemployment benefits. That from Paula. Okay. Now we go to some other stories, as Dan mentioned earlier, and we should talk about this, that the federal government is not extending the social distancing guidelines. They will expire at midnight tonight, and they are going to be fading out. And the administration says the cautionary guidance issued 45 days ago has also been incorporated into recommendations given to the states on how they can begin gradually easing restrictions and reopening their economies. They'll be fading out because now the governors are doing it, according to the president. That's what he told reporters in the Oval Office Wednesday as he met with the Democratic governor of Louisiana. The governor, John Bel Edwards, said that told Trump that the state had turned the corner in its fight against the virus, meeting on a day that brought hopeful signs of a new treatment, but also grim economic numbers. So, Alan, when it comes to this transition of going to the states, of really I guess it really has to be that way in some cases, given that the differences, but it still seems to give a green light that things aren't as bad as they are.
Well, right, Joe. The whole point here is that this is a guy who said he was going to make the decisions, and Cuomo and others said, no, you're not, that those are not your responsibilities. He said, okay, I'm going to let you states do it. And now he has poisoned the well in such a way as, he wants to have it both ways. He wants to be able to carry it, and he's going to make sure that we are going to put people at risk. I am sure of that.
And Judy, what do you make of it as far as, I mean, I guess by extending it, obviously, I don't know what you'd do, because there are areas of the country that certainly aren't affected as others, and you do have to move on, but you also don't want to give the sense that we're out of the woods.
Right, because he is the president, and people do abide by what he says, and so there are a certain segment of the population that are going to hear him, and they're going to say, "Oh, I don't have to be socially distant." I mean, thank goodness you have responsible governors that are trying to enforce social distancing in a lot of the states. But you know, I've always had a problem with the White House press corps because if you remember the briefing in which he says, "Oh, I'm going to have a big decision to make." Decision to make, biggest decision of my life. And then the press corps allowed him to just essentially walk it back without holding him to account. Well, why did you decide to do this? Admit, you know, to even admit that you were wrong, that this wasn't your decision to make in the first place about reopening things. But I think he has a bully pulpit, and there are a lot of people who will hear him say that he's going to end social distancing, and they will stop doing this, and the virus will take off in certain areas, and that's a shame.
He will never admit he's wrong about anything, that's for sure.
That is a character flaw.
You think?
Well, yeah, and especially when you're talking about what is, you know, life or death, obviously, and it is, I'm curious because the you know, we hear these two stories of what is happening of the Mitch McConnell argument of that and in the president too, that it's the Democratic states, it's the blue states that handle this poorly and they shouldn't get a bailout and all of this. So that's obviously making it political. But then also the states that are the ones, but there are the many of those blue states are the ones that are most affected by this, so it hurts in that regard as well, and something that shouldn't become political becomes very, very political, and you just wonder how it's all gonna play out to what Judy just said about people unnecessarily getting sick.
I think, Joe, this speaks to the undergirding philosophy of the right, which we know evangelicals form a large component of the right wing that voted for Trump. And I hate to say this, and you'll probably get some mail, but I won't get it. So the issue is,
no, thanks, Dan.
For me, is that... The issue for me is that this is kind of the Sodom and Gomorrah approach that the right wing is taking. And I'll explain that by saying...
We just have about 30 seconds, but go ahead.
You know, California, New York City, all of these blue states, they are ungodly places where all kinds of ungodly things happen. And who the heck cares what happens? Because we in Arizona, we in Iowa, we in Wisconsin, we live an upright life, and those people deserve the wrath of God that's being played out. I may be out on a limb right there, but I really think that that's part of this.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome you to join us with the Lockbox, WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have a wonderful panel. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Dan Arizari, and Rosemary Romeo. We spent the break trying to get Rosemary back on. And I think...
did you get her?
I think so.
I'm back on, at least for the nonce. My son is going to tease me terribly for my technological ridiculousness.
Joe, how are we doing?
Well, let's see. We are good. You can check your email there, Alan. We've got some new comments
to read. Them.
Excellent. So you can do those. But we are at 287. I'm sorry. We are at $288,188.
So we need $12,000 in the next 25 minutes in order to get to that crucial, from where we cannot be returned, $300,000 mark. Is
that's
that right,
right, Joe? That's right, sir.
Okay, great.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we have heard from a listener who says, thank you, Joe Donahue, Rosemary Armeo, Alan, Sarah LaDuke, Alan et al. Could not get through these times without you. Just became a sustaining member. And from somebody else, The station has been fabulous during this pandemic and is a very good normal times. My family has been blessed. Everyone is healthy and income is not affected. I'm a nurse and have been working continuously. I want to recognize those healthcare workers caring for COVID patients for their courage and dedication to their craft and whoever you are, because there's no name on this. Boy, do we all agree with you. Yeah. These are people who really have done remarkable work. I don't think anybody ever expected they would have to be this threatened in their jobs the way that they are. So our collective hats go off to all of you who have done this, doctors and nurses and people who are cleaning up the rooms and all of you who are keeping businesses open. It's an extraordinary time in America.
It really is. We thank you very much for everyone who's done something. If you want to help us, and we hope
need $12,000.
Yeah. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And you can also just put a check in an envelope for any amount that you know what you can afford. WAMC 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. 12206.
There are many people who can't afford anything now. We get that. But there are many people who can, and those are the folks who can do something, whether it's $1,000, we've seen that, or whether it's $10, whatever you can do, keep us alive. Keep this thing going, right?
Absolutely. WAMC.org. A couple of letters. This one from Kenneth, who says, people know where hurricanes and floods are likely to hit, if not necessarily when, yet some people still live there. Why are these same people now kvetching about having to help with this current disaster after we've helped all them countless times with their much more predictable disasters? And Marcia says, I'm grateful that you are addressing the disproportionate impact that the coronavirus is having on the Latino community. We would make a huge mistake if we did not pay attention and find equitable solutions to the suffering of the marginalized, underprivileged, and many undocumented in the community, because it's going to hurt us all. Not to undermine undocumented, but they are often the nannies of the rich, the dishwashers in restaurants, farmer workers, et cetera, et cetera. They're interconnected with all of us in essential ways, so their health is just as important and has a real impact on many of us who live more privileged lives. Sooner than later, the injustice of communities of color are experiencing in this health crisis is going to take a toll on the wealthy as well. We need to act now, or it could be more devastating than it already is. That letter coming in, and we have just a few moments, and I want to get to one more topic, and that is on the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court will be resuming arguments, and they're going to resume next week with all of it going from home. This is going to be happening from remote locations for the first time. It is unclear exactly where the nine justices will be, other than apart, as they begin 2 weeks of oral arguments unlike any in the court's 230-year history. The coronavirus pandemic has forced changes at the Supreme Court that decades of nagging from the legal academy and threats from congressional critics failed to achieve. Not only will arguments be conducted by telephone, a Zoom meeting might be a bridge too far for the videophobic justices. The world, for the first time, will be able to listen in live as the cases are argued. So, anyone who finds that less than remarkable in the 21st century has probably never noticed that the bronze tortoises are an architectural feature at the Supreme Court, where counsels still receive a commemorative quill pen. So the fact that they're using telephone technology is quite something.
Well, yeah, you know, this court has turned into something. You know, I keep thinking about oral arguments and this and that. You know, it's like a Rorschach test. You show me the case, and I'm going to tell you how it's going to come out, why it's going to be 5-4. And somebody's going to say, well, John Roberts saved Obamacare. Well, you know, it was a unique situation, you know, and I think he knew what he was doing in terms of the reputation of the court. But for the most part, it's going to be 5-4. Yeah. And that's why this presidential election is going to be so important. Now, it was last time, too. I said so. But the fact is, I cannot see how, if Trump is reelected, he doesn't get two Supreme Court appointments, at least.
Rosemary.
So it's good news that the average American can listen in, but it's ridiculous at this point in time that they don't broadcast their oral arguments or they don't allow cameras. I mean, we're still seeing courtroom artists draw pictures of people arguing before the Supreme Court. The technology's there. The public has a right to see how they operate. It's time for them to grow up and get with the technology.
I admit it, and it was a long, long time ago, but I was sitting there in the court, and I started to make some notes, and a guy came up and he says, "You can't do that."
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
The case they're listening to is trade law. No one's going to listen to it anyway. It's not a big landmark case.
But Rosemary, there are a whole bunch
progress
of
progress that isn't really progress.
But Rosemary, there are a whole bunch of cases that are coming up that are going to be very, very important.
We'll see if we get to hear those.
I doubt it. People will always do what they think is self-protective and in their own interest, and that's why this is happening.
Hey, and if the Supreme Court
go ahead, Judy.
If the Supreme Court started to broadcast or allow video access to its proceedings, maybe the state and local courts would start to do the same thing, and there would be mm-hmm. a far greater benefit.
Mm-hmm. Dan?
I can't wait to see the SNL parody of the, Supreme Court on Zoom or something. That'd be great.
They're not on Zoom. I can't say I blame them for that. I'm coming to hate Zoom, but they haven't even made that big a step yet. I do like that the lawyer who will make the first argument is a woman.
Yeah, that was cool. I enjoyed that. I wonder if Ruth Bader Ginsburg is going to be doing squats while she listens to all arguments. That's just the visual that
do
I get.
Whatever you want. No one knows. Let's see. We got a few letters. We'll get to those here real quick in our few minutes left. And just a reminder that the governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo, will be holding a briefing on COVID-19 and the state's response. He'll be doing so in Albany and will be running that at 11:30. The event is to begin at 11:30, and we'll go to that as soon as it becomes available. That coming up in about 45 minutes. We got this letter from Chris, who says, "Dear panel, 61,514 deaths in the United States from COVID-19. Please tell Mr. Trump that we are tired of winning."
I get it. He said we're winning because he was able to save so many lives. It's disgusting, no question.
It's So the other thing, the fact that we have the New York Times, this is the worst economy in a decade. What's next? Worst in our lifetime. And this, where the U.S. gross domestic product declined in the first quarter, dragged down by the pandemic's grip in March. And the Times in the headline says, "Don't even ask about this quarter." And the U.S. domestic gross product, the broadest measure of goods and services output, fell at 4.8% annual rate in the first quarter of the year. The Commerce Department said Wednesday that is the first decline since 2014 and the worst quarterly contraction since 2008, when the country was in a deep recession. There is much worse to come. Widespread layoffs and business closings didn't hit until late March in most of the country. Economists expect figures from the current quarter, which will capture the shutdown's impact more fully, to show that GDP contracted at an annual rate of 30% or more, a scale not seen again since the Great Depression. The Dow is currently down at the moment, and I believe it is down 269.27 at this very moment. Rosemary, what do you make of it? All right. Judy, what do you make of it?
Well, it's going to be years for this economy to come back. It's not going to rebound, especially in time before the November election. Think of the service economy alone. Think of all the movie theaters, the restaurants, the you know, the football stadiums, people are not going to flock to those. It's going to be years, I think, before people are comfortable doing some of those mass gathering type things that that has fueled the economy for so long. That service economy is not going to come back for a long time, and the people who work in that service economy tend to be people of lower incomes, and so that pain is going to continue for months and months and months. A little bit of short-term unemployment boost is not going to help them.
Mm-mm.
I love restaurants. I love to eat out at restaurants. I really do. And I'm not going back to one for a little while. You know, we've been doing takeout, stuff like that, to try to help keep people going. But the fact is that you're so right, Judy. Why would you risk going into a movie theater now? You know, God knows what would happen to you. I won't do it.
And this is going back to an earlier point, though, of it being up to the states and the counties, but certainly the states, to open up these areas to what is possible and what isn't, and hopefully having a good grasp on it. I mean, obviously, there's a lot to be, they have a lot on the line, too, of not opening too soon.
Joe, if I could make the comment on this, to bring it close to home, you know, if you've ever been in a restaurant in the city of Albany, with few exceptions, and you look back in the kitchen, you'll see people of color, mostly Latino, working in the kitchen. And I'm really frightened because I don't see an effort on the part of a local government to compile information. For instance, you know, how many restaurant owners are out there who have staff that are out of work, that are Hispanic? And right now, I don't see any kind of effort to get some of the resources that are out there to get them to this community. So I was talking to D.A. Soares, and he said that, you know, the folks at YONO are doing a wonderful job cooking meals for people, and people can come and pick them up. And he said, you know, there weren't a lot of Latinos there. And he said, what can you do to get the word out? And that's part of the problem right now that I see locally, is that, the messages are not going out to the community that need them most, and in a culturally competent way. So I worry about all of those restaurant workers who are out of work locally in the Capital District, and what efforts are being made to see that these folks are being fed, that their rent is coming due and needs to be paid. And so, again, I appeal to local government here in the Capital District to join us. I mean, give me a call, and we can figure out how to reach out to this community. But again, I feel this is a simmering problem, and we need to act soon to help it.
We are unfortunately out of time. We are going to go. In a minute, Alan, do you see the comments there? We can do some last ones that came in.
New comments, 10:45. In memory of my dear wife, Andrea, who passed in February from metastatic breast cancer. She loved listening to WAMC. Keep up the great work, and that's William and Saugerties, donating in honor of all our essential workers. Anonymous, I've been remiss in the past, but I still have my job and listen every day. You can count on my pledge, every pledge drive going forward. I love that, Peter. And then from Anonymous, I have been able to listen to you almost every day since I've been working from home. As someone who normally works three jobs to have a comfortable life, I have been cut back to one since COVID outbreak. But I consider myself lucky to have it. Thanks for enlightening conversation every morning. Again, from Anonymous.
We are out of time. You can still help us out in the lockbox. WAMC.org is where you go. Do it online. We don't have folks answering the phones, but you can do it online. It's very easy. WAMC.org. And if you are, you know, you don't want to trust the internet or you don't have it, you can simply just put a check in an envelope, 318 Central Avenue, Albany, New York, 12206. We will be back right after this.